Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and a very warm welcome to On the Continent on Football Ramble Daily. My name's Luke Moore.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And today, in this beautiful morning here in South London, and Andy, you are just down the road from where I am, so I know it's absolutely beautiful where you are too. We've got plenty of things to talk about, but before we do that, first of all, Andy, how are you keeping?
I'm well, thank you. Feeling much better than I did last week. Onwards and upwards.
Great. Good to hear. And before we get into it, I've just got a couple of bits of housekeeping. The first one is, if you didn't listen to Jim Campbell's Fantasy Five-a-Side with our very own Jules Breach yesterday, you must go back and listen to it. If you've slept on it or you skipped it, go and listen to it. It's fantastic. It's so entertaining. And I know I'm biased because I love Jules anyway, but her five-a-side team are brilliant. It's hilarious. It's got a brilliant non-footballer guest player as well, which is the highlight of the episode for me generally, but this one is particularly good. So do go back and listen to that. It's yesterday's episode as we record now. So Wednesday's episode, go and give that a listen. And the second piece of admin is, thank you very much to everyone who's supported us through Patreon so far. It's patreon.com/footballrambledaily. There are plenty of extra pieces of audio and shows and accesses to other listeners' thoughts and chat on the Discord. Andy Brassel, you signed up to the Discord as well last week.
I did. So
there's lots of reason to get involved yourself, and you can do so for as little as $5 a month. And many, many thanks to people who've done that already. We appreciate your support. Great. I'll give the URL one more time, patreon.com/footballrambledaily. Andy, anything from you admin-wise? What cup of tea are you drinking and what mug?
I'm having Pucker Turmeric Active. Whoa. Out of my Estadio Ramon Sanchez Pizjuan mug, you know, which has got that incredible mosaic on the outside of the stadium. The mosaic is on the side of the mug.
Mate, that is so on brand for you. It's unreal. Would that type of tea be your breakfast tea of choice then? Because we're recording this in the morning, as I've already mentioned.
Yes, it would. It's particularly good for the throat. So it's very much drunk on behalf of the Football Ramble Daily cause.
Great. And because I'm as well known among in this parish as being the most basic of bitches, I am drinking a builder's tea in a Borussia Dortmund mug.
Yes.
Because I am mainstream and fairly proud of it. For example, just before we started this recording, I was talking about Carly Rae Jepsen. That's how much of a basic bitch I am. Anyway, let's...
You're never not talking about Carly Rae Jepsen.
That is also true. That is also true.
I mean, you know, this would be called On the Jepsen if this was down to you.
That is an entirely different show, Andy, and I am not going to endorse that at all. I'm not going to deny it, but I'm not going to endorse it. Let's start off in the Bundesliga, shall we? The Bundesliga teams are back in training in groups of five. Initially, an exception to that was Werder Bremen, who have since received special dispensation to do so as well. Current guidelines in Germany ban groups of more than two congregating, and clubs had been training remotely in what they've referred to as cyber training sessions, which is an awful phrase. But they are now training in up to groups of five. Facilities such as showers and dressing rooms won't be available to players, and players and staff have been told to observe all hygiene regulations at all times, and there are signs about social distancing around the respective training grounds. There's already been an issue, though, at Bayern with Kingsley Coman and Corentin Tolisso and a twisted ankle, Andy. Is that right?
Yes. First day of them being able to train in fives at Sabina Strasser. And so what's the first thing that happens? Kingsley Coman and Corentin Tolisso turn up and give each other a hug.
Against the regulations. Against the social distancing regulations. And that should be a hefty fine.
Well, there are signs all over Sabina Strasser saying, you know, you need to stay 1.5 metres apart, which, you know, I think is pretty permissive in the circumstances. And, it's just, I guess, they're so excited to see each other. It's just it's a force of habit. Because Florian Kohfeldt, you talked about Werder Bremen there. Well, Florian Kohfeldt, the Werder Bremen coach, had been saying earlier in the week that the fact that you've got to train in fours or fives just means you've got to be more imaginative about how you can get the most out of the session. Now, clearly there's no contact. But for example, what Kohfeldt's done is he's paired a couple of fullbacks with a striker and a goalkeeper so they can work on something together, both defensively and offensively. After this like rather ordinary start to Bayern getting cracking again, Corentin Tolisso having breached the social distancing guidelines, then went and twisted his ankle. What a first day back, eh?
Well, he's never too far away from an injury, is he?
No, it's fair to say. Also, these Bundesliga clubs have got to be careful because they've got a lot of nosy neighbours. Now, the thing we've got to bear in mind when we talk about the social distancing rules and the congregation rules, Luke, is the fact that Germany operates on a federal system, so therefore rules are made regionally rather than nationally, generally speaking.
That's why the Werder Bremen thing was an exception for a while, wasn't it?
Exactly, because that had been one of the things on the final, what would have been the final weekend of the Bundesliga, where they're going to play it behind closed doors. One of the things before Steffen Baumgart, the coach of Paderborn, showed symptoms of coronavirus was the fact that the authorities in Bremen, ahead of the Werder Bremen match, which was going to be on the Monday night, I think against Eintracht Frankfurt, is that they were particularly concerned about supporters congregating outside the ground, as had happened not just at Paris Saint-Germain, but earlier that same night at Borussia Mönchengladbach, when they played the first Geisterspiel, ghost game, the first ever game in the Bundesliga behind closed doors, and it was the derby against Cologne. And I think that would have led to the authorities in Bremen putting the block on that game happening, whatever the Bundesliga decided. But you've got to beware not just of federal rules, but of net curtain rustlers, because there have been anonymous complaints filed against both Wolfsburg and Hanover in the Braunschweig District Court and in the Hanover Court about them breaching congregation guidelines by starting to train again, despite the fact that that is a general Bundesliga guideline.
Right. That's interesting. Also, another aspect to that, Andy, is I believe I'm right in saying that it's quite common for fans to go and watch training sessions in Germany.
Yes.
And they obviously won't be able to do that. So it'll be a slightly different situation for the players on that front as well, particularly if it was ahead of a big upcoming game. It wouldn't be uncommon to see hundreds and hundreds of fans watching the training sessions, would it?
Yeah, that absolutely. Although clearly that's not going to be allowed for a while. I mean,
no.
Christian Seifert, the chief executive of the Bundesliga, has said that they're hoping to move towards a restart, but he doesn't imagine supporters being allowed back in the ground this calendar year. So we'll have to see how that develops, because Bild, the newspaper, floated earlier this week that either May the 2nd or May the 9th could be the date for the restart of the Bundesliga. I mean, I think generally most leagues are on board with like 2 or 3 weeks of full training before they get back to playing in league competition. But clearly there's a financial imperative, and
that is a really important point. Let's get on to that then, because virologists in Germany have commented a May restart could be possible at this stage, although they've warned that plan would involve a huge amount of testing. And this is starting to become key now for German football, because we're getting to a stage where it's desperate to restart as soon as possible because the financial imperative is so strong. I heard our colleague Kev Hatchard say that potentially 4 Bundesliga clubs and 50% of Bundesliga Zwei clubs could file for bankruptcy if the final tranche of broadcasting money doesn't materialise. Now, it's clear this virus is going to affect the world in a number of different ways, but focusing just on the football for the moment, because that's what we're here for, it's becoming absolutely abundantly clear that this is going to be a dramatic game changer all over European football. When I heard that, I was actually quite frightened for what that meant. What's your take on it?
Well, I think it can seem incredibly heartless, like looking forward when everything that's happening in the world is happening in the world, talking about financial imperatives. But the reality is people need to work, and we need to have at least a semblance of economy to come back to, whatever your job is.
Yeah.
And in and around the Bundesliga clubs, in terms of non-playing staff at the various clubs, you're looking at an industry that, well, probably every major league props up anywhere between 60,000 and 80,000 employees in each of those leagues, and even more if you're talking about indirectly. So this is a big deal. It was interesting to see Schalke putting out a statement this week where they were talking about how they would appreciate fans not asking for their money back on the remainder of their season tickets. And in fact, what they're doing is they're issuing a special Schalke shirt to everyone who doesn't ask for the rest of their season ticket money back. And that they put out a statement saying, each individual waiver is an immense contribution to stabilizing the liquidity of the club and ensuring the survival of the club, which I thought was quite interesting, because Schalke are an absolutely massive club. We talk about it again and again and again. You know, this is, in terms of bums on seats and people through the turnstiles, this is one of the top 10 biggest clubs in the world. So for them to be in that situation just shows how, as you say, how far-reaching it is.
Yeah, it's a really difficult balancing act to I mean, of course, the most important thing is that as many people as possible are healthy and stay clear of this virus, or if they sadly contracted it, recover from it. And I mean, yeah, we know that. I mean, we said that 100 times already since this has all happened. People listening know that that's the most important thing, and we don't need to keep repeating it. But if we focus on the football, It's incredible to watch as it unfolds over the weeks, because what's going to happen is clubs, as you've said, Andy, even the size of Schalke, are going to be in big trouble if there is effectively no product, which is what the football is. And it affects so many different people in so many different industries, ourselves included. Mm. And it's also unprecedented. So we were saying on Monday on the Ramble with the other guys that essentially, you know, what's happening, what we're seeing unfurl in real time is just the ideas, like creative ideas that are being leaked or being briefed to journalists of suggestions on how to fix this, because it's never been encountered before. And there isn't a solution really that anyone can think of. And there certainly isn't a solution that's going to suit everyone. But what's really important, you know, the next priority after people's health and their lives is the idea that these proud institutions, wherever they are in Europe or beyond, that have been around for, in some cases, well over 100 years, and been focal points of communities throughout most of that time, are protected and can continue to function, because people are always going to want to watch football, and it's no good, particularly in Germany, because we're focusing on that at the moment, for, you know, half the professional clubs to no longer be existing. I mean, that's just not an outcome that anyone wants to see, is it?
No, absolutely. And like I said, when you're talking about a club of that sort of size being in danger, it is a reminder of, you know, how sort of parlous it all is, really. But having said that, there is still football life going on. And go back to Bayern at the start. I mean, they've signed off two big new contracts this week,
yes,
albeit with a slight reduction temporarily, like everyone yes. else.
Yeah, let's focus on that. I mean, it's Hansi Flick, the manager, and Thomas Müller. Let's start with Flick. He's signed a new contract at the club, came in to replace the, shall we say, let me just put this diplomatically, the underappreciated Niko Kovac, shall we say. for whatever reasons, you can fill in the blanks on that. But Flick has won 18 of 21 games in charge. Worth pointing out, the games he's lost in the Bundesliga, I think there's only been two of them, they were narrow defeats, and at least one of them they should have won.
Both
from
of
what
them.
I saw. Both of them he should have won. Okay, so we'll upgrade that to both of them. They've been excellent under him from what I've seen. Presumably you'd agree, Andy, but you did say to me the other day that you weren't sure if this contract would have been so forthcoming had we not been in the middle of this crisis.
No, I'm really not convinced, because I think they have looked at this from a sort of United with Solskjaer perspective, in that everything was going fantastically, but why should they give him the contract, a permanent contract to be permanent head coach before the end of the season? And I think that's pretty fair reasoning. Not because I think him and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer are directly comparable in terms of their ability or their situation or their effect on their respective teams. But there's simply no rush. And of course, Hansi Flick's people have wanted to get this over the line for a while. And they've been saying, well, we've had calls from elsewhere in Europe. Now, maybe that is the case, but I think it's exactly the sort of thing that your agent should say when he's trying to get you signed to a proper deal. I don't think they would have done this before the end of the season, but I think this is linked to not just managerial moves and coaching moves going into the close season, whenever the close season will be, but just the whole uncertainty of moves of football personnel between clubs. I think in terms of what Hansi Flick has given to Bayern so far, I think they wanted to see, and you know, the president of Bayern had said, well, you know, we want to, you know, he's going to be judged on trophies at the end of it. I think that's pretty clear. But also, you know, when will that judgment be able to be made? I think they've just really done the smart thing, and Herbert Hainer coming out and saying, you know, he'll eventually be judged on trophies is no surprise to anyone. But when you don't know when those trophies are going to be awarded, I think this is the sensible conservative approach. And of course, Thomas Tuchel, depending on whether, you know, the Champions League finishes or not, that might affect whether he's still at Paris Saint-Germain going into next season. We know they've been interested in him for a long time. But what's really been the difference with Bayern under Hansi Flick is the fact that they began to look like Bayern again. For the first time, arguably, since Pep Guardiola. You can have little bits of the Carlo Ancelotti era. But generally, the fact that, you know, they're playing with attacking intent, with real vigour, that's been the huge difference. And the fact that the players have responded to him and respected him has been absolutely huge as well, because that is not a given with a coach at Bayern.
No. Well, as we mentioned Niko Kovac already. The situation as you describe it, Andy, is for me is spot on. I mean, he's done a good job. We're in a very, very uncertain situation at the moment, and it might be a bit reductionist to say this, but it could just be a case of this is one less thing to worry about. We can't control so many of these aspects of football at the moment, but we can control this. Let's double down on Flick, and so we know where we are with things when football comes back. And on Thomas Müller, who's also signed a new contract, as I mentioned earlier. I'm sort of a little bit disappointed in that from a football point of view, chiefly because I would have liked to have seen him sort of ply his trade somewhere else. It's just because he's done everything at Bayern, he's done everything in German football, he's won the Champions League as well, he's won the World Cup. But I wonder whether, because he's so settled in at Bayern and because he's a senior pro there, and he clearly is very happy there, I wonder whether this Premier League interest was just a very convenient thing for him when it comes to driving a hard bargain with Bayern when it comes to his next contract, and whether he actually had any intention at all of leaving the club.
I'm not convinced that he did. But in fairness, the Premier League speculation is nothing new. I mean, he's signed for Manchester United more times than Nicolas Gaetan, hasn't he? Yeah. And I think if you look at Müller, though, the perception of him inside Germany and outside Germany is very, very different. I don't think anyone outside Germany really... inside Germany, sorry, really ever lost sight of his value. But I think outside Germany, particularly with the way that he's played this season, there's been a sense of, oh, he's back, when really he never went away. I mean, much of his aura, you could argue, was fragilized by people reading Pep Confidential, who looked at him and thought, oh, well, Pep Guardiola didn't rate him enough to put him in midfield. And it's like, well, yeah, but isn't that really, like, the idea of nailing him down to any particular position is an intrinsic misunderstanding of what Thomas Müller is and how he works. The fact is he does look like a very old school footballer, because, you know, he's no physically he's no Bison, he's not incredible in the air, he's not unbelievably quick, he's not even unbelievably skillful on the ball, is he?
No.
But the fact that he's this kind of undetectable player is what gives him his value. The fact that you can't nail him to any particular position is what gives him value.
Yeah, I think on the things that he does do well, he passes the ball very well. He keeps the ball well. He makes the right decision. He's not. There's nothing really that glamorous about him, but he delivers at the very top level a tremendous amount of appearances every year. And he weighs in with his fair share of goals more often than not, and assists as well. I mean, he's a very, very useful player to have. And the only criticism people can level at him is they don't quite understand what he brings, or he's not glamorous enough. Then I'm sure that won't cause him to lose any sleep.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I think he's come back into his own since Niko Kovac has gone, because Kovac and him didn't see eye to eye at all. I don't think Kovac could really find a way to fit him in or always. And that's changed. That's one of the things that's changed under Hansi Flick. And, you know, it's worked really well, not just for Müller, but for Robert Lewandowski as well. The connection between them has been fantastic. And you look, the fact that Thomas Müller has scored 6 goals in 18 Bundesliga starts, he's laid on another 16 in that time.
16 assists, yeah.
That's pretty incredible. But if you go back through the numbers, year after year after year, he's a very, very good linking player. He's as good as it gets in terms of that. And he will always chip in terms of creating goals for other players. And that's not even talking about the space he creates with the movement, which for me is his premier quality. But of course, what's so valuable about him, particularly to Bayern, is the fact that they feel this need. And the way that Bayern has always run in recent decades is about that Bayern DNA that runs the club. And, you know, that has gone up top to Hoeneß, Rummenigge, Franz Beckenbauer in his day. And you've seen that now with Oliver Kahn being co-opted onto the board, and he'll be key for them going forward. But going back to the Guardiola era, and it's something we've talked about before on OTC, the pain of Bastian Schweinsteiger leaving was something that was immensely tough.
Only rivaled by the pain of him arriving.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. On a sporting level, there's absolutely no argument. You know, Guardiola has been proved more than right in getting rid of him from Bayern, but that doesn't mean it didn't hurt. It really hurt. And that idea of someone who's part of the club, who gets what Bayern are about, who get what they think, that will always be important for them. That will always be hugely important for them. And he's a big part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just great news for Bayern Munich, I think. And even if he is underrated and people can't quite place him, or he's suffered a reputational impact from Pep Guardiola, then, I mean, he has still finished in the top 20 in the Ballon d'Or rankings in five separate seasons. So he can't be doing too bad. And he still contributes a hell of a lot, as we've just established there. So, yeah, good news for the Bavarian club.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Andy, over in Spain, Javier Tebas has been front and centre, which you'd expect is exactly as he likes it. But he has taken a slightly different approach to the current hiatus in football, because he's keeping international media informed by giving press conferences. And he gave a press conference this week saying that the most likely dates for a return in Spain are either the end of May or possibly some point in June. Now, Spain are officially in a state of alarm until April 26th. Mm. And Tebas said himself, this is the current plan based on the advice from the health department and authorities in Spain. He also said null and void is not currently on the table, and he feels confident they can finish the season. But my first question on this and Tebas's statement is it actually even up to him anyway? Because to me, it feels like he's in hoc, and rightly so, to whatever the government and the authorities want to do, because Spain's been hit so badly by this virus.
Yeah, and everyone is. There's no doubt about that. But it goes back to the beginning and what we were talking about, I guess he would describe it as preserving the economic integrity of Spanish football. And, you know, there are a lot of clubs at risk. What I think is so interesting about Tebas' approach is not just that he's involving the international media, but he's forever talking about an international solution. For him, it's very important that top leagues work together. And he said, I think top and medium leagues was the phrase he used. And he said it's off the table for any of them to finish early. I think that was very interesting, hearing him speak about a pan-European approach, because he was saying quite rightly that, you know, how other nations do it is going to affect us as well, because Spanish clubs are owed hundreds of millions in transfer fees for future transfers and for subsequent payments on transfers that have already happened. And clubs need that to survive as much as they need television money. And that's why everyone needs to work together, in his opinion. I think the way he presented it, as you say, gave three separate dates for possible resumption. So 28th of May, 6th of June, 28th of June. I think that's realistic though, isn't it? Because, you know, you just don't know at this point. As we were saying before, you need time. The players need time to play themselves in. But, you know, they need the TV money. There's absolutely no doubt about the fact they need the TV money. There's a very interesting article, actually, this week by Dermot Corrigan in The Athletic about just how Barcelona have got themselves in the position where this is a big threat to them. The fact that the financial tap has been turned off. Now, they were doing very well revenue-wise in the first part of 2020. But then for it to just come to a juddering halt, they've got such huge overheads. It's unbelievable. And another thing that Dermot pulled up in this article is that if you look at the International Sports Money League for the moment, in terms of what they pay out for player wages, if you look at all sports across the world, you've got three clubs who are ahead of NBA clubs. And if you compare like individual NBA players to professional football players and elite professional football players, the top NBA players get paid more in terms of their purely footballing salary. But there are three clubs who pay more collectively than any NBA team. And those three clubs, Barcelona, Real Madrid, and you guessed it, Juventus as well. So, you know, they are huge money generating machines. But when that stops, you know, they're potentially crippled by absolutely enormous overheads. And I thought it was quite interesting as well, the fact that Real Madrid have just come out actually last night, as we're talking now on late on Wednesday, about saying that they've brought forth cuts to the contracts of their playing squad by somewhere between 10 and 20%, depending on what the players actually get paid. It's very interesting, isn't it, that they're taking far less of a cut than Barcelona.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, perhaps I've misunderstood it, or I'm just plain wrong. But my understanding was that by far the biggest overhead was player wages. That if you take the news that broke at the end of last month that Barcelona players have agreed to take a 70% wage cut, clearly that goes a long way to reducing their overheads. But ultimately, as we touched on earlier, you're talking about an industry where the product is the only product that the industry. Essentially, I know this is an awful way of putting it, but just for illustrative purposes, the only product that industry sells has now been suspended. So there is nothing to be sold. So it really it feels a bit like you're just fiddling while Rome burns by doing this kind of stuff, because the overheads are still going to exist to an extent, and they're still going to be unsustainable because there's no product to sell to make up the shortfall, particularly if one of your biggest clients, i.e. the TV companies, aren't going to pay because there's nothing to pay for. So there's a huge amount of challenges still to overcome here. And I do have sympathy. I mean, you won't often hear me say this, but I do have sympathy with Javier Tebas at the moment, because he has to try and instill a little bit of certainty into this game in Spain. He has to try and do that. That's kind of one of the main roles he's got to perform at the moment. Yet he's got so little to work with, for obvious reasons and entirely understandable reasons, that when I read his statement, and you said it was probably the best way to go about it, I understand why you think that. But for me, it felt a bit, well, if you're going to give an option of three, and it felt to me like he probably could have given more as well, you're almost not worth doing it at all. because it doesn't give you any certainty. People are just going to be looking forward to that first date, which I think was at the end of May 28th and 29th, and waiting for it to come around. And if
but
it doesn't manifest itself,
he can't give certainty. But
no, that's what I'm saying. He's got an impossible position, which is why I'm sympathetic towards it.
But what he can do is suggest at least a level of planning.
Well, you and I could do that.
It's the best you can do. It's the best you can do in this situation. How many people out there are doing that? And I think his job as a business leader is to at least project some vision of confidence. That's really important. Also, what I thought was really interesting is the conversation he had with Iker Casillas on Twitter, where he talked, this was a few days before he came out with these numbers. And he was kind of forced to come out with these dates as well, because some stuff had been leaked in the Spanish press. So that's the other aspect to it, the fact that he had to come out and say what's what, rather than just let speculation go unchallenged. So he had to come out with something, I think. But the conversation he had with Casillas, where Casillas, who of course is a candidate or was a candidate before everything was stopped, to challenge Luis Rubiales for the presidency of the RFEF, which is the Spanish FA. So presumably Tebas and Casillas, who will have a lot of support when the vote goes forward, could be working together quite closely in the future, and will certainly hope to mend fences between La Liga and the RFEF that have been quite badly damaged over the last year.
They're going to have to
so.
Work together, aren't they? So, I mean, this whole thing's going to throw it into unison, because they have to work together to get through it.
Absolutely. They will. And what Casillas had said, and a few people have talked about, a few coaches as well have talked about the idea that football maybe would change its calendar, especially to fit in with the 2022 World Cup, which is going to be in winter. But Tebas had come out and said, you know, I think Casillas had said, why doesn't next season start in February or something like that, for example? Yeah. And we essentially switched to a summer season. And Tebas came out and said, and again, this is something that seems brutal in the circumstances, but he said, well, what are we meant to do with the TV money from next year? We've got contracts going forward years that we have to respect. And if we want to come back to a football that's sustainable, that's economically viable, then that has to be done. I mean, we talked last week, didn't we, about Ligue 1 and the difficulties with the TV deal there. Now, the development with that, actually, and I guess the reason I bring that in here, not only because we're talking about a pan-European solution being relevant, but the fact that it's a Spanish company, MediaPro, which is taking over the rights for televising French football next season. And then a little bit of it's going to be co-opted to beIN, who I think might subcontract it to Canal. So then they're not left with nothing. Well, how it's moved on is MediaPro have come out and said, and they've been a bit quiet in terms of what they're going to do, in terms of how they're going to diffuse it, what channels they're going to create to diffuse it, all that sort of stuff. And because they're not known within the market, and because they're in an overseas broadcaster, people have been a little bit twitchy about it. But the president, Jaume Rures, has come out in an interview in L'Equipe today, this Thursday actually, and said, look, we can, if they're not going to pay, we can show the end of the season. Like, we will come in early and we will show the games at the end of the season once it starts. We'll almost start the TV deal early. And this is important because, one, it gives beIN and Canal a sort of get out. But two, and this is hugely important, especially when we talk about the scheduling and why the scheduling is important. People have been focusing on player contracts and the expiration date of June the 30th. And of course, that's something that FIFA have talked about this week and tried to make a thing of. But it's also important because in the case of France, for example, where the new TV deal comes up this year, it's obviously worth a lot more money than the current deal. So they feel that the start of next season is maybe more important, or some of the club presidents at least feel that the start of next season is more important than the end of this season. One, because they don't know if Canal and beIN are going to pay up for the rest of this season. And two, because it's a nice little financial boost once they get the MediaPro show on the road.
Yeah. I mean, it's fascinating, isn't it? But just quickly, Andy, before we move on entirely from this, Players in Spain, seemingly led by Toni Kroos, want assurances as to where the money is going to go if they do take a wage cut, going back to that wage cut issue. And there appears to be a bit of a breakdown in trust between them and the powers that be there. But what's different about that situation compared to what Barcelona players appear to have done unilaterally? Why is there a disconnect there?
Well, I think it follows on from what's happened with Barcelona. And the fact that there is, despite the fact that Barcelona players have accepted this, there is a disconnect between their board and the players. And in fact, a group of Barcelona employees came out after the announcing of the wage cut and said, well, no one from the club has talked to us about protecting our wages or anything like that. So I think Toni Kroos has received some stick, obviously, for saying, well, I don't want to take a wage cut. I want to make my own personal donation. And I think that connects actually to what some of the Premier League players have done. I mean, they're doing this fantastic thing together for the NHS. But I think their sense has always been that they want leadership of it. And I can understand that. You know, on one hand, players are being asked to do the right thing. But on the other hand, they're being asked to simply just put up and shut up. Don't have an opinion on the best way to do it. Don't, criticise the fact that it's a collective approach when some players earn a lot more than others. And, you know, that's one of the problematic issues of an across the board pay cut, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I feel as if Toni Kroos is a bit like some Premier League players, has been a little bit scapegoated. He's kind of had to do some backpedaling and said, look, I've never said I don't want to give up any money. That's not what I said. But people have, you know, I guess, looked at him and sort of said, well, look, he's just been a tight right-wing footballer who doesn't want to give any of his money away, typical rich bloke, which I think is a little bit unfair. What he said is more nuanced than that. And I wouldn't be surprised if he looked at what had happened with Barcelona and with Barcelona's non-football, non-playing employees, and said, well, you know, we need to know where the money's going. We need to be able to trust the club to do the right thing. And, you know, I don't think it's unreasonable for players to ask those questions.
No, I completely agree. And I also think that if you didn't have a relationship with the owner of the club or the big decision makers at the top of the club, you would want assurances about, you know, what the plans are, because, you know, I think I said this on the Ramble on Monday or maybe the week before, that in the Premier League, the combined wealth of the owners of the Premier League clubs is like 80 billion quid. Mm. And no one's putting any pressure on them to do anything.
Mm.
So I just feel like it's absolutely right for players to want assurances as to what's going to happen with the money, because football financially is run in such a crazy way that you would never rule anything out. And they want to know that money's being used in the right way. I it's always difficult on these types of stories when we do this show for me, because I don't speak the native language. So it's translated and you normally get it for a secondary source and you don't really know if the nuance is lost in the translation or whatever. So I didn't want to bring it up as a way to kind of use it as a stick to beat Toni Kroos with. But it was just interesting to see the difficulties that are surrounding these decisions, because again, as we talked about already today, it's an unprecedented situation, and I would have sympathy with a bunch of players if they gave up a load of money which they had signed on as contracts to be earning. I understand it's a lot of money and it's far more than any of us will ever earn, but nevertheless, if that money just went somewhere where it shouldn't have gone, or it ended up going into a transfer kitty for two seasons time or something, that wouldn't be right. So I do think it's fair for him to say, I'm happy to do this. We're all happy to do this. And generally speaking, Andy, I think you'd probably agree with me on this. The encounters you have with players, and they generally are keen to do the right thing, and yes, they do a lot of work that goes unreported, yes, charitably. So I don't think that they are the bogeymen here. I think it's right that they ask for assurances, and to me that's fair enough.
5 minutes left, and Horton's pass intercepted by Baker, and he didn't get a good touch on the ball. Aylott got it instead. Steen drove it low against Caton, and Steen again. And he gets the cross in, and Williams has come, and Tiche! Oh, he's there! They've done it! Radiant Tiche! 4 minutes to
Let's round off today's episode by sparing a mention for Radi Antic, who sadly passed away aged 71 this week. He had been suffering from pancreatitis, been ill for some time. He was manager for Atletico Madrid's only double in 1996 and is the only man to manage La Liga's three biggest clubs. Now, some of our older listeners may remember him as being involved in the goal that rescued Luton Town from relegation in May 1983. And if you don't remember the goal itself, you probably will remember David Pleat galloping across the pitch in his suit like a man late for his daughter's wedding chasing a bus. And so he's a legend in Luton, Woody. And football throws up these amazing kind of situations, doesn't it? He's a Serbian guy. He managed in Spain. But he's a legend in Luton. An interesting character, hugely loved, seemed to be quite a principled guy as well. Probably treated a little bit shoddily by Real Madrid, but then you could probably level that at a lot of managers. He was fired with them way clear at the top of the league and replaced by Leo Beinhacker, who lasted just 6 months himself. It was a league title they didn't go on to win, but he did have subsequent success at Atletico Madrid, and he managed Barcelona for a short time as well. So, as I said, the only guy to manage La Liga's three biggest clubs.
Yeah, and I think that the spell in which he was looking after Barcelona would have tested the best of coaches. It was a really, really difficult spell for them. And I think he said at the time that the 6 months in charge he was there felt like 6 years. But he was a great storyteller. And this was something that was emphasized in Sid Lowe's tribute to him in The Guardian, which if you haven't read it, I would suggest you dig it out. It's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, second.
Because you were talking about the Luton goal at Manchester City, and I'm not sure which is more arresting when you rewatch the footage of that. Luton's very, very cool 80s Adidas strip, or David Pleat's suit and shoe combo. Which was very, very difficult on such a surface to run on.
It's really interesting because the kit the players are wearing and the suit the manager's wearing look like they belong to different eras. Yeah. But they don't.
No, they really don't. They really don't. But as Sid was saying, the fact that no one in Spain was really aware of the Luton situation was great for Radi Antic, because it meant that he could tell the story again and again and again. It's something he really liked to do. But yeah, we wanted to focus on the 96 double win with Atletico. Firstly, because it's a one-off for them. Secondly, because it was completely unexpected, a bit like the 2014 title. And it was just after the overpeaking of Johan Cruyff's dream team with Barcelona. But, you know, you can't overlook the fact that this is a huge part of Atletico history. I mean, we know how much things have changed under Diego Simeone. But if you go back to the last year they were in the Champions League final, for example, in 2016, if you look inside the collar of the Atletico shirts, it says 95-96, and then next to it 2015-2016, because it's all about the 20-year anniversary of that double under Radi Antic. And it was partly to give them inspiration as they went for the Champions League again, but it shows what an absolutely incredible pivotal moment it was in Atletico history. And if you look at that team, it was something that we always talk about Simeone's team representing the best of Atletico, and representing not just the club, but the spirit of the club and the spirit of the barrio, the spirit of the neighborhood when they were the Calderon. And that is something that Radi Antic was all about as well, and something that he understood very, very well. Now, of course, Simeone himself was a player in that season when they won the double. And it was a team based around a particularly strong midfield. So, you know,
talk to me about Caminero.
Well, that's it. What you think of Kiko leading the line. The fact is, the players who really worked for him were José Luis Caminero, was Simeone, who scored a dozen goals that season, which is pretty amazing because people think of him as, you know, just a midfield butcher, really. There was a lot more to him than that.
I mean,
that.
He was that as well.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, some butchers are still really good salesmen, mate. Yeah, it's not mutually exclusive.
that is right. But Leonardo Biagini, who he brought in, again, from South America, who that was his only really outstanding season. He contributed a lot. And Milinkovic-Savic was brilliant in that season as well and chipped in with goals from midfield. And
from what I remember, because it was obviously a lot more difficult to watch football back then from overseas, and a lot of my interest was essentially limited to World Soccer magazine and whatever you could pick up on TV highlights or whatever occasionally, particularly in European football or Champions League or whatever. But Pantic was the guy who had amazing delivery from out wide, right?
Yes.
And it's a thing that's classic for me, and I might get this wrong because memory can be a funny thing, but I remember them having Pantic as a brilliant deliverer of a dead ball and a brilliant crosser of the ball. And then they had Kiko up front, who was a great forward, but was really tall. And I, from memory, hardly ever scored a header. Like, I don't remember him ever scoring a header, yet they still managed to win the double. And they also had Quinton Fortune in that squad as well, by the way.
Yeah, who... I mean, he came towards the end of the season. He didn't play much. So he wasn't a huge...
Caminero was a great midfield player, though.
Yeah, he really was. His movement was absolutely fantastic. And of course, we didn't mention Lubo Penev, the Bulgarian striker who was already in Spain by that point, but was taken as another example of Radi Antisha adding this kind of Eastern European flavour to this team. But you know, we talked when we were talking about Bayern at the top about the sense of a club's DNA and how difficult it can be to move on players who are past their sell-by date because they mean a certain something to the club. One of the things we have to say is Abel, their legendary goalkeeper, was one of the first things that Radi Antich did. He moved him on at the start of the season because he was close to the end. But again, it was very, very difficult to move him on, because like to replace a player like that, and especially a goalkeeper, is something that's really tough. They brought in Jose Molina from Albacete, I think it was, to replace him in the end. But Abel going at that point, he still had the record for the longest amount of minutes without conceding a goal in La Liga. And especially when Atleti are built on such belt and braces sort of values, to move him on was a huge deal. Of course, he ended up coming back and coaching the team for a little bit later, Abel. But that was another big decision. And it showed really how much he really grasped what the club was about, that he managed to move on someone with that sort of experience and that sort of status, and yet still produce a team that was so thorough and so represented the club's values.
Absolutely. And that is clearly very important to a club like Atletico Madrid. But I mean, people listening won't need me to tell them, but I'll state it nonetheless. To win a double in La Liga, if you're not managing Real Madrid or Barcelona, is an incredible achievement. There's probably a very good reason that Atletico Madrid have only done it once in their entire history. And I don't imagine they'll do it anytime soon again. So for that alone, Antich has to go down as a legend of the game, particularly in Spain. But of course, you know, it's important for us to remember him and his contribution he's made to the game in this country as well. So condolences to his family and his friends, because he achieved a great deal in the game.
El balón y el gol. El gol del Atlético de Madrid que acaba de marcar Pantic. Acaba de marcar Pantic el gol para el Atlético de Madrid en el minuto 12 de la primera parte de la prórroga. El gol de Pantic para el Atlético de Madrid.
All right, that's about it then, Andy, for us today. We'll be back, Football Ramble Daily, of course. We'll be back tomorrow with the preview show with Marcus, Jim, Pete and I. And it's back with the Blizzard's greatest games on Saturday. So look out for that as well. Don't forget to tip your hat to us over on Patreon if you'd like to pay for some extra content, some early access stuff, some opportunity to chat and discuss football with other Patreon subscribers, including ourselves as well. Do that.
Get some idle bants with us.
Exactly, Andy. You've mucked in, haven't you? I saw you mucking in the other day. It's patreon.com/footballrambledaily. Andy, when will we hear you next? We'll hear you next on Tuesday, will we, with Jules and Andy?
We certainly will.
We'll look forward to that as well. Stay safe, everyone. Look after yourselves, and we'll catch up with you soon.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.